for the best Ravens coverage. What time is that? It's time for News from the Nest with Vinny and Haney.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Don't miss out. Buy two windows from Window Nation and get two free. Plus, no interest or payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. News from the Nest here on this Monday. Ravens added OTAs this week, starting preparation for the 2024 campaign, which has high hopes for a Super Bowl appearance, championship, deep playoff run. Remember, they made the AFC Championship game yesterday, fell at home to the Kansas City Chiefs, as we all know by now. Very disappointing loss for various reasons. Now you move on to the next season. And the Ravens, as we talked about earlier in the show with Brian Wacker from the Baltimore Sun, not only did they lose 15 players via free agency or other avenues, lost a lot of coaches there, coordinators and the like. And now Zach Orr takes over from Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald was the architect of one of the best defenses in the NFL in 2024, as we've talked about again many times. You know, Kansas City to 17 points in the AFC Championship game, none in the second half. So defense wasn't the problem. He now moves on to Seattle, where he will take over for Pete Carroll as the head coach there. But Zach Orr, he's been on the Ravens staff for a few years now. If it wasn't for a very serious neck injury, Nolan, he might still be an active player in the league. Maybe not in Baltimore, but an active player nonetheless. Now he takes over, and in theory, I don't disagree with it. Not that they give a crap what I think, the Ravens. The only concern I would have with Zach Orr, it's not youth, it's the lack of play calling experience. And who is he going to lean on, maybe mainly? Because John Harbaugh is not a defensive play caller. He's a special teams guy. And he usually defers to his coordinators. If he needs advice, where is it coming from? Is what I'm kind of asking here.
Right, and I'd imagine, again, I've never called plays in the NFL, but I'd imagine it's one of the more hectic things you can do with how fast things are moving and all the information you're trying to take in on the fly. And you're thinking about where that might be the biggest issue would be the beginning of the season. And I start looking at the schedule to start the season, and what, four of those first 5 weeks or three of those first 4 weeks, you know, the starting quarterback competition that the Ravens defense will be up against is going to be tough. You know, you're going to be facing Mahomes, Prescott, Burrow there pretty early,
Josh Allen
very early. I mean, outside of that Raiders game where we don't even know what we're getting in terms of quarterback, some really tough matchups for the first-year defensive coordinator here.
Yeah, but Zach Orr, level of enthusiasm, maybe more relatable to the younger players because he's close to them in age, but that's something that we're going to keep an eye on for sure. And some of the players that he's going to be coaching, Patrick Queen's in Pittsburgh now. Now Trenton Simpson is elevated to a starting role next to Roquan Smith. Now it's not bad having maybe the best player at his position in the NFL running shotgun with you, but I don't know what to expect from Trenton Simpson last year. As Vinny has said many times, Vinny Serrato here on the show, you know, maybe it took him a while to get acclimated to the plays and, you know, grasping the speed of the game at the NFL level coming from Clemson. Athleticism is there. Saw flashes towards the end of the season, that Steelers game, I believe, in particular. But I don't know. Does Trenton Simpson come close to duplicating what Patrick Queen did statistically last year, where his numbers were pretty robust across the board?
Yeah, I'm very much in a wait-and-see type of mood when it comes to Trenton Simpson. And it's not really anything against him. It's just, you know, what have you shown us so far in your NFL career? There's nothing really there that tells me that he can go right to being a starter right along Roquan. Now, with that being said, starting situations across the league, that might be one of the most, advantageous for a young guy being able to play next to a guy like Smith. But at the same time, I think this is an area where, you know, looking for some veteran help, even if Trenton Simpson ends up being your starting guy, who's behind him? Mm-hmm. There's really nobody there. So some sort of addition is needed.
And staying on the defense, and in particular the D-line, Justin Madubuike, we saw in the second half of 2022, a player starting to come into his own, and had an all-pro season in 2023. Broderick Washington got paid, not a crazy contract, team-friendly, but paid nonetheless, and kind of forgot he was even on the field oftentimes. So can he be the guy that they gave money to? And does a guy like Travis Jones maybe level up a little bit after a relatively quiet second season in the league?
Yeah, where you got some depth concerns maybe at linebacker. We were just talking about D-line, exact opposite. I think you got enough in-house here, even going down to your rotational pieces like a Brent Urban, bringing him back for another year. You're pretty well set in your personnel department there. It's just a matter of getting the most out of the group. And everything still hinges around Madubuike, in my opinion. Is he going to live up to the big money? You know, Broderick Washington sure live up to the money, but he didn't get paid, you know, top of the league money. He got a pretty team-friendly deal, and it's nice to have him around. But, you know, the guy that you're paying that big money to, Madubuike, he's still got to lead the way.
And we talked about safety as well. You have Kyle Hamilton and Marcus Williams. If Marcus Williams is on the field for 17 games healthy, he's as good as it gets at his spot. Unfortunately, his 2 years in Baltimore, that hasn't been the case. Kyle Hamilton's a stud, but where's the depth there? And we've talked about it. We'll talk about it tomorrow with Kevin Allstriker. You and I have talked about it. You know, I could see a veteran safety or maybe two added to the equation before September 5th against the Chiefs.
Here. Definitely. And considering Williams' track record here with Baltimore, it's been unfortunate because prior in his career with the Saints, really no injuries to speak of, at least no major injuries. A guy that was always going to play a full season or close to it. And now since he's been in Baltimore, it's like he's just got the bug. He's got the injury bug. And we're not talking, you know, a bruised up hamstring here or, you know, a little soreness there. I mean, we're talking big, significant stuff.
Well, he was the one-arm dude last
year. Right. Even when he comes back, he's playing in a limited capacity. So, absolutely, I'm looking for more depth there.
And at cornerback, you have the young guys coming in, Nate Wiggins, first-round pick, and then TJ Tampa. A lot of Breece Hall said he's the steal of the draft, his teammate at Iowa State. What's left in the Marlon Humphrey equation here? I mean, there's another guy towards the end of the season was banged up. He was the pigeon against the Rams in that overtime thriller at M&T Bank Stadium when they made that big comeback. In the second half, Marlon's young, only 27, but it feels like he's been around for 15 years. What's Marlon bringing here? We talked about Ronnie Stanley earlier with Brian Wacker about what level of play you get from him now. What about Marlon?
Yeah, it just feels like he was kind of behind the eight ball last year. You get injured in training camp. You miss the start of the season. It's almost like you're chasing at that point, that even when he was ready to come back, was he forcing it? You know, was he truly 100% or did he feel pressure to get back out there because he had missed that time to start the year? I think a healthy training camp, healthy start to the season, see how he rolls from there. We know he likes to play physical. He's probably not going to change the type of player he is. So you got to keep that in mind when you're building the roster around him, is that, you know, this guy's not going to change his stripes, nor should we really want him to. But with that being said, got to have a plan B.
News from the Nest, Benny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw before we hit the break. And I guess still the biggest question, concern, whatever, for the Ravens as we start all of this stuff, offensive line. Three starters gone from last year. Linderbaum's a beast. Ronnie's been beastly, but he was getting rotated out of games late in the season, so I would think you might still be fingers crossed getting production out of him this year, not to mention the three available spots. Talking about Voorhees, like he's been a three-time All-Pro. He hadn't played in over a year. Never played in the NFL.
Right. I think, I mean, they did probably as well as they could in the draft, all things considered, as we look back on it. You know, guys flying off the board in the first round, you weren't going to go and get a tackle there. You ran out of options, so you take the corner in the first round, still get a starting caliber guard, potential tackle of the future in the second round with Rosengarten. But other than that, I mean, they take another, a center, Nick Samak, later on in the draft. So would you have liked to have seen them take another O-lineman maybe in the fourth over a Tampa or a Walker? Maybe. But they did about as well as they could in the draft. That doesn't mean they're going to be ready for week one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Thus far, I think my bigger gripes are not really with the draft. It may be more so with who they chose to let walk in free agency or even the trade with Morgan Moses.
Yeah, for relatively, what, he had no money, basically. So that, okay, but my gripe with the O-line would be Falele, Cleveland, Pooper, get off the pot. I mean, it's time to rise to the occasion. You're entering their, what, third year in the league?
Mm-hmm. And so, if the Ravens are really relying on them that heavy, I just don't think that's a safe method. And we have a lot of time here, sure, obviously, but you know, we talk about the confidence. Vinny was always talking that they seem so confident in the way this team is shaping up. Are they overly confident when it comes to the O-line? Because outsider's perspective, I mean, there's a lot of question marks there.
And we try to answer them for you. You got any questions, share them with us. 410-583-1057. Let's count that money. Next, however, buy or sell. Talk about the many sports subjects on this Monday. And then John Denton covers the St. Louis Cardinals for MLB.com. Why are the Cardinals below 500 when a lot of people pick them to win?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Their division.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 1057, The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 1057, The Fan, here on this Monday. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. Vinny's off this week. Orioles at St. Louis, taking on the Cardinals. Ravens out at one winning drive with OTAs. Maryland's in the Final Four for the 29th time in school history. Alexander Usyk, the undisputed heavyweight champ. First one of those. Going back 25 years. Plus, we got all sorts of things going on. Seize the Gray won the Preakness Stakes, and we'll get into it as much as we can. Right now, let's count some money by yourself.
All right, S&P 500 is up 15.41 today. Not too shabby. Under Armour down roughly 5 cents. And DraftKings up 4 cents. But it is up. 2 out of 3, not so bad. As far as the sports topics, we'll start in the NBA, where the rumors of a Trae Young trade have been brewing for quite a while now. It feels like multiple years at this point. Nothing has really come of it, though. Really nothing close. Any serious concrete rumors, but many thought that a team like the Spurs would be in the mix given their current financial situation. They are in need of some sort of star to pair with Victor Wembanyama, but as of now, their interest in Trae Young from San Antonio is very little, if nothing at all. They have the leverage, they have the draft capital to work with. Some move is necessary, though, if they want to take that next step, like we said. Buy or sell, Trae Young, not a good fit for San Antonio.
Yeah, I'll buy it. And I don't know how he'll coexist with Greg Popovich either. I mean, because Greg Popovich, brilliant coach, Hall of Famer, but maybe a little surlier in his years. Remember, was it last year, Trae Young and Nate McMillan did not see eye to eye. And him and DeJounte Murray haven't really vibed like they had thought that duo would. I'll buy it. Him in San Antonio, probably not an ideal situation. Because Trae Young, let's be honest, kind of a liability defensively, too. I mean, when he's on fire, he's as high volume productive as it gets. But, sell.
I think at one point, we talked about it last year, he was voted most overrated by his peers in an anonymous poll amongst players.
They're the best ones.
All right.
Where you don't have to defend yourself or expose yourself for Sadie Socks.
We'll go over to the NFL, where things have not been trending in the right direction for Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts, really since his rookie year when he showed promise with 1,000 yards in 2021. Atlanta, they still went ahead and picked up his fifth-year option, the price tag that comes with it, just over $10 million guaranteed for 2025. That'll be his fifth year. He says he appreciates the vote of confidence from the organization, dead set on showing them something different here in 2024, and things are different around him. So buy or sell, Bob, with a new scheme, new quarterback throwing him the ball, Pitts will finally live up to that draft status.
He was a top five pick? Man, I'll sell that. I don't know if he'll play like a top five pick in the draft. He's had injury problems. Quarterback play's been sketchy, to say the least, at least the last couple of seasons. But I'll buy that he'll have his best season. I don't know if I'm putting him in the Pro Bowl just yet, because there's other mouths to feed in Atlanta, too, by the way.
Maybe time for one more here. Things ended brutally for the Thunder on Saturday night. They led big at the half. Looked like they were well on their way to forcing a Game 7. They ultimately lose on a somewhat controversial foul call there with under 5 seconds left to play. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander called for a shooting foul on Washington. Did make contact with the ball first, but then as we saw, his arm slides down, touches Washington as well. The refs, they explained their stance afterwards. The quote here said, "Since the ball was not dislodged by the contact, the ensuing contact to the arm is illegal. Had the ball been dislodged when Shai hit it, the contact afterwards would have been deemed marginal." Are you buying or selling, Bob, that explanation?
I'm selling it. I mean, I get it in theory, but, you know, maybe that's a swallow your whistle kind of call that late in the game. If the roles were reversed, I'm sure OKC would have been cool. We say it was Luka fouling him, that sort of thing. They'd have been cool with it. They had opportunity to take command of the series and never did. Maybe they got a little full of themselves after dismantling the Suns as easily as they did in the first round. But look, I got no problem blasting officials, as I've said many times, and I will do it multiple times when it's all said and done. But tepid at that. If I was a Thunder fan, though, I'd probably be a little bent.
Right. Well, you never want to go home on that. But we do always say with the refs, you want to hear their stance afterwards. And I'm sure this was through a pool reporter. He's not fielding questions at the podium.
No, they never do.
But still, an explanation is nice.
Okay. So if P.J. Washington, who hit, the two foul shots, right? Mm-hmm. He gets hacked after the ball pops loose. They would have not called a foul, is what they're saying.
By their explanation.
Okay.
There, yeah.
All right. Well,
deemed marginal.
Well, either way, Dallas advances to the conference finals for the second time in 3 years, where they get Minnesota, who's there for the first time in 20 years, after winning 3 games in Denver, including coming from 20 back yesterday to stun the Denver Nuggets. We'll come back, talk about the St. Louis Cardinals hosting the Orioles. Start of a 3-game series tonight, 7:45. John Denton, MLB.com, talks about what's going on in St. Louis. Why are they 6 games below 500 and not on top of the standings here?
The latest sports news and your place to talk about it. Always. 105.7 The Fan.
All right, we're on a tracking mission here. John Denton, MLB.com, covers the St. Louis Cardinals hosting the Orioles. Start of a 3-game set tonight, 7:45 out there. Orioles coming off a series win against Seattle. Blowout Friday, tough loss Saturday. Grayson Rodriguez back. No hitter. And then the bullpen let it slip away as the Orioles lose that one 4-3 and then bounce back nicely. Thank you very much. Yesterday afternoon behind Corbin Burns, 6-3. Gunnar Henderson, leadoff homer, is sixth of the year, is 15th overall, tied with Kyle Tucker for the major league lead. Ryan O'Hearn, underappreciated, maybe star, with O'Malley struggling here. Maybe, and when Anthony Santander dealing with the banged up knee, remember he ran into the wall against the Blue Jays last week, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Maybe O'Hearn get start at first base. O'Malley gets a day off like he did this weekend against Seattle, trying to get himself out of it a little bit. I mean, Cedric Mullins had two knocks, two ribbies yesterday, which was good to see, as he's had a rough go of it here in 2024. But Ryan O'Hearn, he just continues to churn out hits. Positional versatility, could play first base, could play both corner outfield spots. I mean, the guy's a stick. And you talk about one of the underrated moves that Mike Elias has made over the last 12 to 14 months. How about that one? Getting him from Kansas City off waivers. Remember, he didn't even make the team coming out of spring training last year. And then got his opportunities and made the most of them. And Ryan O'Hearn, he's one of the more potent bats in this Orioles lineup. Gunnar Henderson, he's been outstanding, as we've talked about, as he's one of the candidates right now for league MVP. And we've been talking about this, if you want to get in, at 410-583-1057 through 44 games. Who's the Orioles MVP? You get three votes. And it's a tough one to do because Gunnar, I think we all picked to be the MVP, except for Rich Dubroff from BaltimoreBaseball.com, who picked Adley as the team's most valuable player. But I went Gunner, I went Westberg, and then Adley at the three hole there. Nolan went with Gunner, Corbin Burns, and then Jordan Westberg to round out his top three. But it's a nice dilemma to have all of these all-star level performances. Plus, you have Colton Cowser, who's playing like a rookie of the year candidate, and he was swinging the bat great over the weekend, made a sterling defensive play, a diving catch out there in right field that saved a run. Or an inning opportunity off of Cole Irvin there as he kind of silenced things for the Seattle Ball Club. But there are a lot of really good players on this team, and it is pretty awesome to watch just this evolution of an Oriole team. And we were talking about their record against the American League East this year after the Toronto series, 12-0-5. In their last 17 series against the American League East, and you go back to 2021 and they were getting destroyed. Their best record against an American League East foe that year was 8-11 against the Yankees. They were 1-18 against Tampa. I mean, they literally didn't belong in the same field as teams in their own division. And yet here they are now. They haven't lost a series in 17 tries against the so-called best division in Major League Baseball. But O'Hearn and Gunner setting the table there offensively. Craig Kimbrell gets the save. Before we get to the phones, Nolan McGraw, is your Craig Kimbrell angst, is it calmed down a little bit given his last four performances? And they've all been pretty dominant. And yesterday, as we talked about earlier, okay, maybe the strike zone favored him just a little bit, but that's a Seattle problem. So at least for today, May the 20th, Craig Kimbrell's not an Oriole problem right now.
No, and I mean, we were talking about it late last week that, you know, who else do you turn to? Unless they're going to go outside the organization here through a trade, Kimbrell's got to be the guy because there's nobody else that really fits that profile. And sure, it's always going to be a concern in the back of your head that, hey, Kimbrell, you know, could hit a rough patch at any point, but he's your guy. He's who you paid that money to. You roll with him. And when he's out there, I mean, it's pretty easy or at least quick to figure out whether he's got it or not. I mean, the difference that he's shown when he's on his game and when he isn't, I mean, you usually tell within the first couple pitches. Is he hitting that fastball up in the zone or is he, you know, nibbling down and away where he can't even get it across the plate? And that's been the key difference. When he's on, he's putting that fastball right where he wants it, keeping the batters off balance and inducing weak contact, if not getting a punch out.
Yeah, I think the first two pitches he threw yesterday were balls, but he settled down to get out of it. But to your point, yeah, you could tell when he's kind of got that that positive mojo rolling because he is and can be a dominant closer. Is he what he was in his prime? No, nobody really is. I think they should still be concerned about the bullpen moving forward because overwork looks like it's caught up to Jacob Webb. Yennier Cano had a rough week as well. So we'll see how things unfold. But the last four outings for Craig Kimbrell, the exact opposite of what the previous few were, where a lot of people wanted to run him out of town on a rail, as they said.
Right. And even, like I said, I mean, he's going to have his rough patches, but the overall concerns with the bullpen, you know, if Kimbrel's on his game, but everyone else is kind of slacking, well, you know, you're no better off. It's really about the full collective effort, no one individual guy. You know, you need everyone or most of your guys out there clicking at the same time to be successful. And you are kind of in an interesting point in time. We just saw it with Bauman. Guys run out of options. That makes things harder to do from a roster shuffling standpoint. You're looking for a fresh arm. It's harder to get one up here when guys are kind of locked in. And you never want to DFA someone, especially someone with as much talent as a Mike Bauman. But, you know, Mike Elias now is in some of these tough decision modes where, all right, we do have to kind of give guys a little bit longer of a leash because we don't want to lose them for good, even if they're not the best for us right now.
Yeah, Albert Suarez is a guy that hadn't pitched in the majors in 7 years. He stays. Mike Bauman goes. Just tuning in, Rich Dubroff, who we talked to earlier, and we'll talk more about this with John Mioli in the 1 o'clock hour from the Baltimore Banner. The likelihood that Mike Bauman has thrown his last pitch with the Orioles is pretty strong.
Right.
He's going to get claimed and they're going to trade him or something like that.
Well, that's the key thing there for me is that, I mean, he's good as gone, but can we swing a trade here? You know, is he so highly coveted that someone who doesn't have a favorable waiver position says, hey, we really want this guy. What's it going to take, Baltimore? And, you know, it'd be nothing crazy in terms of a return, but you get something here. Maybe, you know, an international prospect, some 18-year-old kid. You don't really know much about him, but it's a lottery ticket. Who knows what he could become?
Hey, Mike Bauman's a guy that was one time the Orioles minor league pitcher of the year, and now he's going to find employment in the majors. What doesn't look like it's going to be with the Orioles. Oh, and if you missed this news, Ryan McKenna was claimed over the weekend by the San Francisco Giants, so you don't have him to pick on anymore.
I was surprised. I don't know how you felt that he was claimed.
Slightly, but San Francisco's got a ton of injuries to the outfield, so they went there. So Ryan McKenna, Baker Mayfield's long-lost, almost twin-looking brother, he's gone to the Bay. And again, you know, this was another guy who was one of the Orioles' top prospects in a time, however, in which the Orioles having top prospects. I mean, they were lucky if they had, like, one guy in the top 100 those days. Now right. They have, like, seven.
So it's funny you mentioned that. They're showing the rain delay coverage on Saturday. And, of course, it's that same Braves-Orioles game from the COVID year again and again and again. And who's behind the plate for the O's in that game? Chance Sisko. Remember when he was the top guy that we're banking on Chance Sisko to come up here and be something. Times have changed drastically.
Yeah, going back even farther 20 years ago, you would have thought Hayden Penn was the next coming of Mike Mussina. Boy, that didn't work out well for anybody involved there. Let's go to Cliff in White Marsh. Cliff, what's happening?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking the call.
How you doing?
I'm looking at the composition of the Yankees, the Orioles with their lineup, a little bit of their versatility. The only difference between the Orioles, and it's going to be a good race, make no bones about it. The only difference between those two teams is the back end of that bullpen. And, Bob, you've probably had 20 callers proposing a trade or whatever. I'm not going to say who I would go get on the back end, but the Orioles have three outfielders right now, that are left-handed hitting outfielders. The only person in that organization I'm not trading is Mayo. I wouldn't include him in any deals, but when you have the assets to move a couple guys that might not, you know, they're not going to figure in here. And you have a chance to go get a closer, and it's going to put you right neck and neck to go to the World Series. I don't see how I know you can wait a little bit, but that's got to be in the Orioles' mind.
And Cliff, not even really like a closer per se. Revisit
right.
What you did back in 2014 when you got Andrew Miller. That made a good bullpen a great bullpen because you already had Zach Britton had assumed the role as the closer by then. But, man, they were almost unhittable at the back end of the bullpen. So even something similar to that. And, yeah, you're right. There are assets. Hey, if Kerstad's got to be sacrificed, who had a grand slam walk-off yesterday, so be it. Kobe Mayo, unfortunately, he's going to be out for a while because he fractured his ribs last week running into the dugout.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thanks here.
The latest sports news and your place to talk about it. Always. 105.7 The Fan.
All right, we're on a tracking mission here. John Denton, MLB.com, covers the St. Louis Cardinals. Cardinals hosting the Orioles. Start of a three-game set tonight. 7:45 out there. Orioles coming off a series win against Seattle. Blowout Friday, tough loss Saturday. Grayson Rodriguez back. No hitter. And then the bullpen let it slip away as the Orioles lose that one 4-3 and then bounce back nicely. Thank you very much. Yesterday afternoon behind Corbin Burns, 6-3. Gunnar Henderson, leadoff homer, is sixth of the year, is 15th overall, tied with Kyle Tucker for the major league lead. Ryan O'Hearn, underappreciated, maybe star. With O'Malley struggling here, maybe, and when Anthony Santander dealing with the banged up knee, remember he ran into the wall against the Blue Jays last week, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Maybe O'Hearn get start at first base. O'Malley gets a day off like he did this weekend against Seattle, trying to get himself out of it a little bit. I mean, Cedric Mullins had two knocks, two ribbies yesterday, which was good to see, as he's had a rough go of it here in 2024. But Ryan O'Hearn, he just continues to churn out hits. Positional versatility, could play first base, could play both corner outfield spots. I mean, the guy's a stick. And you talk about one of the underrated moves that Mike Elias has made over the last 12 to 14 months. How about that one? Getting him from Kansas City off waivers. Remember, he didn't even make the team coming out of spring training last year. And then got his opportunities and made the most of them. And Ryan O'Hearn, he's one of the more potent bats in this Orioles lineup. But Gunnar Henderson, he's been outstanding, as we've talked about, as he's one of the candidates right now for league MVP. And we've been talking about this, if you want to get in, at 410-583-1057 through 44 games. Who's the Orioles MVP? You get three votes. And it's a tough one to do because Gunnar, I think we all picked to be the MVP, except for Rich Dubroff from BaltimoreBaseball.com, who picked Adley as the team's most valuable player. But I went Gunner, I went Westberg, and then Adley at the three hole there. Nolan went with Gunner, Corbin Burns, and then Jordan Westberg to round out his top three. But it's a nice dilemma to have all of these all-star level performances. Plus, you have Colton Cowser, who's playing like a rookie of the year candidate, and he was swinging the bat great over the weekend, made a sterling defensive play, a diving catch out there in right field that saved a run or an inning opportunity off of Cole Irvin there as he kind of silenced things for the Seattle Ball Club. But there are a lot of really good players on this team, and it is pretty awesome to watch just this evolution of an Oriole team. And we were talking about their record against the American League East this year after the Toronto series. 12-0-5 in their last 17 series against the American League East. And you go back to 2021 and they were getting destroyed. Their best record against an American League East foe that year was 8-11 against the Yankees. They were 1-18 against Tampa. I mean, they literally didn't belong on the same field as teams in their own division.
And yet here they are now. They haven't lost a series in 17 tries against the so-called best division in Major League Baseball. But Ahern and Gunnar setting the table there offensively. Craig Kimbrell gets the save. Before we get to the phones, Nolan McGraw, is your Craig Kimbrell angst, is it calmed down a little bit given his last four performances? And they've all been pretty dominant. And yesterday, as we talked about earlier, okay, maybe the strike zone favored him just a little bit, but that's a Seattle problem. So at least for today, May the 20th, Craig Kimbrell's not an Oriole problem right now.
No, and I mean, we were talking about it late last week that, you know, who else do you turn to? Unless they're going to go outside the organization here through a trade, Kimbrell's got to be the guy because there's nobody else that really fits that profile. And sure, it's always going to be a concern in the back of your head that, hey, Kimbrell, you know, could hit a rough patch at any point, but he's your guy. He's who you paid that money to. You roll with him. And when he's out there, I mean, it's pretty easy or at least quick to figure out whether he's got it or not. I mean, the difference that he's shown when he's on his game and when he isn't, I mean, you usually tell within the first couple pitches. Is he hitting that fastball up in the zone? Or is he, you know, nibbling down and away where he can't even get it across the plate? And that's been the key difference. When he's on, he's putting that fastball right where he wants it, keeping the batters off balance and inducing weak contact, if not getting a punch out.
Yeah, I think the first two pitches he threw yesterday were balls, but he settled down to get out of it. But to your point, yeah, you could tell when he's kind of got that that positive mojo rolling, because he is and can be a dominant closer. Is he what he was in his prime? No, nobody really is. I think they should still be concerned about the bullpen moving forward, because overwork looks like it's caught up to Jacob Webb. Yennier Cano had a rough week as well. So we'll see how things unfold. But the last four outings for Craig Kimbrell, the exact opposite of what the previous few were, where a lot of people wanted to run him out of town on a rail, as they say.
Right. And even, like I said, I mean, he's going to have his rough patches, but the overall concerns with the bullpen, you know, if Kimbrell's on his game, but everyone else is kind of slacking, well, you know, you're no better off. It's really about the full collective effort, no one individual guy. You know, you need everyone or most of your guys out there clicking at the same time to be successful. And you are kind of in an interesting point in time. We just saw it with Bauman. Guys run out of options. That makes things harder to do from a roster shuffling standpoint. You're looking for a fresh arm. It's harder to get one up here when guys are kind of locked in, and you never want to DFA someone, especially someone with as much talent as a Mike Bauman. But, you know, Mike Elias now is in some of these tough decision modes where, all right, we do have to kind of give guys a little bit longer of a leash because we don't want to lose them for good, even if they're not the best for us right now.
Yeah, Albert Suarez is a guy that, you know, hadn't pitched in the majors in 7 years. He stays. Mike Bauman goes. Just tuning in, Rich Dubroff, who we talked to earlier, and we'll talk more about this with John Mioli in the 1 o'clock hour from the Baltimore Banner. The likelihood that Mike Bauman has thrown his last pitch with the Orioles is pretty strong.
Right.
He's going to get claimed, and they're going to trade him or something like that.
Well, that's the key thing there for me is that, I mean, he's good as gone, but can we swing a trade here? You know, is he so highly coveted that someone who doesn't have a favorable waiver position says, hey, we really want this guy. What's it going to take, Baltimore? And, you know, it'd be nothing crazy in terms of a return, but you get something here. Maybe, you know, an international prospect, some 18-year-old kid. You don't really know much about him, but it's a lottery ticket. Who knows what he could become?
Hey, Mike Bauman's a guy that was one time the Orioles minor league pitcher of the year. And now he's going to find employment in the majors. What doesn't look like it's going to be with the Orioles. Oh, and if you missed this news, Ryan McKenna was claimed over the weekend by the San Francisco Giants, so you don't have him to pick on anymore.
I was surprised. I don't know how you felt that he was claimed.
Slightly, but San Francisco's got a ton of injuries to the outfield, so they went there. So Ryan McKenna, Baker Mayfield's long-lost, almost twin-looking brother, he's gone to the Bay. And again, you know, this was another guy who was one of the Orioles' top prospects in a time, however, in which the Orioles having top prospects. I mean, they were lucky if they had, like, one guy in the top 100 those days. Now they have, like, seven.
So it's funny you mentioned that. They're showing the rain delay coverage on Saturday. And, of course, it's that same Braves-Orioles game from the COVID year again and again and again. And who's behind the plate for the O's in that game? Chance Sisko. Remember when he was the top guy that we're banking on Chance Sisko to come up here and be something. Times have changed drastically.
Yeah, going back even farther 20 years ago, you would have thought Hayden Penn was the next coming of Mike Mussina. Boy, that didn't work out well for anybody involved there. Let's go to Cliff in White Marsh. Cliff, what's happening?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking the call.
How you doing?
I'm looking at the composition of the Yankees, the Orioles with their lineup, a little bit of their versatility. The only difference between the Orioles, and it's going to be a good race, make no bones about it. The only difference between those two teams is the back end of that bullpen. And, Bob, I you've probably had 20 callers proposing a trade or whatever. I'm not going to say who I would go get on the back end. But the Orioles have three outfielders right now. You know, that are left-handed hitting outfielders. The only person in that organization I'm not trading is Mayo. I wouldn't include him in any deals, but when you have the assets to move a couple guys that might not, you know, they're not going to figure in here, and you have a chance to go get a closer, and it's going to put you right neck and neck to go to the World Series. I don't see how I know you can wait a little bit, but that's got to be in the Orioles' mind. I mean,
and Cliff, not even really like a closer per se. Revisit
right.
what you did back in 14 when you got Andrew Miller. That made a good bullpen a great bullpen because you already Zach Britton had assumed the role as the closer by then. But, man, they were almost unhittable at the back end of the bullpen. So even something similar to that. And, yeah, you're right. There are assets. Hey, if Kerstad's got to be sacrificed, who had a grand slam walk-off yesterday, so be it. Kobe Mayo, unfortunately, he's going to be out for a while because he fractured his ribs last week running into the dugout. But, yeah, there's wherewithal throughout this organization. Kyle Stower sitting on your bench right now could be someone that could be used in a deal. But bullpen help, I think, is needed and needed in a big way. But then again, Cliff, as you know, a lot of teams are going to be looking for that come trade deadline time.
They're all young and they're all left-handed hitters. You can't keep all those one-dimensional outfielder left-handed hitters. And even Holiday, Bob, I knew he wasn't ready. He didn't even look like he was ready defensively to play in the major leagues yet. And I think he's going to be a very good player. What's going to happen if he is just a notch below Gunnar Henderson? Do you think the Orioles are going to be able to pay two guys that kind of dough? I don't think so. And I think Henderson is the franchise guy. And I would even consider moving Holiday if we could get a closer for the next 3 years. I think the Orioles would be unbeatable.
Well, it all depends. Hey, thanks, Cliff. It all depends on who that closer is. I mean, Jackson Holliday, a month ago, we were all praising this guy as the next thing since sliced bread for greatness. Now, because he had a struggle in 2 weeks in the major leagues, we're ready to trade him. It seems. I'm still letting that one play out. And Cal Ripken himself said he looked like he probably wasn't ready at that time. And Jorge Mateo has stepped in nicely. Thank you very much. And played great second base. Now he's getting on base. I mean, Jackson Holliday, stay down on the farm, regain that confidence, get that stroke back, and do what you have to do. But yes, another bullpen piece is needed, in my opinion, because do you trust Cionel Perez? Do you trust Yennier Cano fully in pressure situations? Because he doesn't get them big K numbers like he did when he first came up. He hits a lot of bats here. Bauman's no longer part of the equation. Albert Suarez, it's been a very touching story, but is that really sustainable? Yeah, bullpen help is needed. Hey, the Yankees closer, man, I don't know what great things he's doing. 13 saves and a 0 earned run average.
One day trades.
3 cents a share. That's $3.
You cheap.
And one plays scratch offs.
When we go to gamble, we go to lose.
If they still work here, you can bet they're in the bin. Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, Nolan. You watch NASCAR?
I do not.
Did you see these two dudes punching each other yesterday after the race, which I don't even think was like a real race? It was kind of the all-star break race for that sort of thing. And I'm not a big NASCAR fan, full disclosure. But Ricky Stenhouse and Kyle Busch were engaging in fisticuffs after said race. And apparently Ricky Stenhouse was the instigator as he threw a right hand at Kyle Busch. Now, from what I understand from people who do follow NASCAR, Kyle Busch isn't apparently one of the more well-liked guys on the circuit. But still, last thing you want to see is some sort of altercation after the festivities. But on a weekend in which featured the undisputed heavyweight championship and many other boxing extravaganzas, you got these two dudes punching each other at pit row.
I'm watching it now. I mean, they got a whole audience around him. All the cameras were there ready. And now he's fighting with another guy. There's a tire involved. The tire's falling on him.
That's
God.
Right. It was very WWE-like. I was waiting for Lou Albano to come out there and like hit somebody with a folding chair, or Mr. Fuji to throw like salt in somebody's face. But always on a day in which the race, I don't even think counted. I could be wrong in the points. They're fist fighting afterwards. Now, granted, you're going 100 and whatever miles an hour, 200 miles, and if someone's driving crazily, that could probably set you off. Look how these a-holes road rage just driving on 695 every day. So I could see where the blood might boil a little bit, but what? Not even a real race, but yet the punch looked real. I think Stenhouse was trying to knock his block off.
Oh, no, he went for it. And again, in front of all those cameras, he didn't care.
We'll throw it down, baby. They add a little drama to NASCAR, whose ratings have been dropping by all accounts here over the last couple of years. When we come back, we got NFL Lunch. Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com, is going to be joining us. Post-schedule release thoughts on the AFC in particular. Jeffrey's actually based in Kansas City with the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, but they've had some off-the-field drama for sure that might have an impact on their roster, at least when they get on the field for the Ravens on September the 5th. And the Houston Texans, who the Ravens will face on Christmas Day, 425, they appear to be the trendy pick to make a deep run in the playoffs. I got to be honest with you, last year around this time, I was kind of all on Jacksonville maybe being that team, and they didn't even make the playoffs as they had a late season collapse. But Houston not only made the playoffs last year and won a game, they've gotten better in the offseason, adding Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon, among others. So we'll talk to Jeffrey about that one, and obviously talk about the AFC North, where the Ravens reside. We got the American League East report coming up here at 1:15. Tell you what happened over the weekend in the division as the Yankees continue to play really well. Orioles aren't exactly stinking it up either, but they're losing ground in the division. We'll elaborate there. There's actually day baseball as we speak, as the Braves are up 2-0 over the Padres. And we'll talk Orioles with John Mioli from the Baltimore Banner at the bottom of the hour. Ryan McKenna's gone. Will Mike Bauman follow him out the door as he was DFA'd over the weekend to make room for Grayson Rodriguez? And will the Orioles be aggressive like others will be, trying to bolster a pitching staff, in particular the bullpen? And the loss of Kobe Mayo means what for his chances of making the roster this year? Was he even going to play for the Orioles in 2024?
One day trades.
3 cents a share. That's $3.
You cheap.
And one plays scratch offs.
When we go to gamble, we go to lose.
If they still work here, you can bet they're in the win. Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, Nolan. You watch NASCAR?
I do not.
Did you see these two dudes punching each other yesterday after the race, which I don't even think was like a real race? It was kind of the all-star break race for that sort of thing. And I'm not a big NASCAR fan, full disclosure. But Ricky Stenhouse and Kyle Busch were engaging in fisticuffs after said race. And apparently Ricky Stenhouse was the instigator as he threw a right hand at Kyle Busch. Now, from what I understand from people who do follow NASCAR, Kyle Busch isn't apparently one of the more well-liked guys on the circuit. But still, last thing you want to see is some sort of altercation after the festivities. But on a weekend in which featured the undisputed heavyweight championship and many other boxing extravaganzas, you got these two dudes punching each other at pit row.
I'm watching it now. I mean, they got a whole audience around him. All the cameras were there ready. And now he's fighting with another guy. There's a tire involved. The tire's falling on him. My
God. That's right. It was very WWE-like. I was waiting for Lou Albano to come out there and like hit somebody with a folding chair, or Mr. Fuji to throw like salt in somebody's face. But always on a day in which the race, I don't even think counted, I could be wrong, in the points, they're fist fighting afterwards. Now, granted, you're going 100 and whatever miles an hour, 200 miles, and if someone's driving crazily, that could probably set you off. Look how these a-holes road rage just driving on 695 every day. So I could see where the blood might boil a little bit, but what? Not even a real race, but yet the punch looked real. I think Stenhouse was trying to knock his block off
there. Oh, no, he went for it. And again, in front of all those cameras, he didn't care.
Well, throw it down, baby. They had a little drama to NASCAR, whose ratings have been dropping by all accounts here over the last couple of years. When we come back, we got NFL Lunch. Jeffrey Chedia, NFL.com, is going to be joining us. Post-schedule release thoughts on the AFC in particular. Jeffrey's actually based in Kansas City with the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, but they've had some off-the-field drama for sure that might have an impact on their roster, at least when they get on the field for the Ravens on September the 5th. And the Houston Texans, who the Ravens will face on Christmas Day, 425, they appear to be the trendy pick to make a deep run in the playoffs. I got to be honest with you, last year around this time, I was kind of all on Jacksonville maybe being that team, and they didn't even make the playoffs as they had a late season collapse. But Houston not only made the playoffs last year and won a game, they've gotten better in the offseason, adding Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon, among others. So we'll talk to Jeffrey about that one, and obviously talk about the AFC North, where the Ravens reside. We got the American League East report coming up here at 1:15. Tell you what happened over the weekend in the division as the Yankees continue to play really well. Orioles aren't exactly stinking it up either, but they're losing ground in the division. We'll elaborate there. There's actually day baseball as we speak, as the Braves are up 2-0 over the Padres. And we'll talk Orioles with John Mioli from the Baltimore Banner at the bottom of the hour. Ryan McKenna's gone. Will Mike Bauman follow him out the door as he was DFA'd over the weekend to make room for Grayson Rodriguez? And will the Orioles be aggressive like others will be, trying to bolster a pitching staff, in particular the bullpen? And the loss of Kobe Mayo means what for his chances of making the roster this year? Was he even going to play for the Orioles in 2024?